Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today. And today we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about avoiding injury in the garden. You know, I don't think I ever even consider injuries when I go out in the garden. Maybe you don't either as you're listening in, but you know what? It happens. And there are some things that you can do to sort of help yourself prevent those kinds of injuries that can occur in the garden. And we got a couple of guests for you to talk about that today. Susan Carpenter back with us. Hi, Susan.
Hi, good to be here.
She is the Senior Outreach Specialist in the Wisconsin Native Plant Garden at the UW-Madison Arboretum. And we'll probably talk a bit about the Arboretum as well as we move along and also talk about native plants too. But also in the studio with me is Jude Sullivan. Jude, good to see you. Thank you for coming by.
Thanks for having me, Larry.
He is a senior exercise physiologist at the UW Health Fitness Center. So we'll be talking about steps you can make for an injury-free gardening season. We'll also take your native gardening questions. And you can join in by phoning us at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Jude, this is your first time with us. Talk a little bit about your background.
Sure. So I've been in the health and wellness field for about 30 years, kind of grew up in it. My academic training is in cardiac rehab and exercise physiology. But as I was in the academic world, our sports medicine clinic was coming to fruition. And so I was working as an undergrad with them at that time. So I was getting the clinical end of the spectrum and then the sports end of the spectrum. And as it happens, we also have an adult fitness center and class program, which is open to the general public. So I had a lot of experience working with kind of that gray area in between, so to speak.
Is gardening a good thing for fitness, overall fitness?
Well, if you look at the research right now, movement of any kind is really definitely
getting outside.
It's a positive, yes. And so the idea is to think about being perpetually active, making an excuse to get up out of your chair, whatever it is. Nothing is inconsequential as long as it adds up over the course of a day.
Yeah. And Susan, you have been teaching a fitness for gardeners course.
Well, I've been teaching a general women's strength training class for about 10 years now.
Yeah.
And the way I got into that was actually because being a gardener, I found that when spring rolled around, if you don't have a pretty good program through the winter, you get a little sore in April. I think we're all kind of familiar with that. And so I started doing a general strength training class myself, and then I began to teach it after a few years. And it's really been great to help other people, not just for preparing for gardening in the spring, but also for all kinds of things that people like to do, travel, kayaking, other outdoor sports, and so forth. So a general program, which is kind of what we're advocating today, is what we would use to prepare for really anything, just regular life.
Well, I'll just ask you right away, how does sign up work?
For the course that we're teaching a course on February 2nd. It's a Saturday morning from 8:30 to 10:30, and this will be at the Research Park Clinic facility there. And it's a 2-hour class. There'll be a little bit of presentation, but then there'll be movement. So people should come prepared to move around and give a lot of exercises a try. And we're going to provide an exercise program, basically, that people can take home and work on themselves and keep themselves going until really the true outdoor season starts.
Do you know that if this is being done elsewhere, of course, this is in Madison, what about elsewhere?
Well, I think as Jude said, it's a really good idea for everyone to stay moving. And I do know from, fitness trackers that when you're a day spent gardening will at least double your double or five times, depending on how active you normally are. But a gardening day for me is you know, really an active day. You know, 20,000 steps is not at all unusual. And, you know, in order to keep active all day like that, you want to have, you know, you want to be prepared in a way. You don't want to just have a suddenly start in with your outdoor your outdoor season without thinking about, you know, your muscles and how you're going to be warmed up and how you're going to take care of your, you know, your posture and lifting and twisting and all the different movements that we have in gardening.
I usually, well, I'm pretty much every day I'm out for a little 3 mile jog or whatever, and or walk sometimes, depending, like with the snow, I don't go racing around the neighborhood on the icy steps, but you still, I'll still be a little stiff, whatever, if I get a heavy, so I'm not using all the muscles I probably should be using.
Well, the idea is that there is a certain degree of specificity, you know, and even within the world of gardening, you know, there's a whole array of different ways that you might go about that in terms of how you use your body, the types of tools that you might be using. And so what Susan was saying, it's definitely to your benefit to have a kind of a baseline level of fitness that serves you. And so ultimately, as Susan said, the program we're going to develop and go through with people is something that serves them. Sometimes people think of exercises, you know, it's something that they become a slave to. But, you know, if it's really thoughtfully done, it's something that serves them over time. And they can actually, with intention, understand how if they do something in their program, it's going to benefit them in real time when they're gardening.
So this course that you're teaching, as an example, it's a 2-hour class. So, mm-hmm. But it's 2 hours, and it's not 2 hours every week. It's a 2-hour class, right?
Yeah, it's a workshop format, and we want to give this introduction to people. And then, I mean, obviously, if someone wanted to pursue a more extensive program and they wanted more guidance along the way, then of course they would want to take up a, you know, a regular program or have a, you know, work with a trainer or something like that. Or maybe sign up for another course, because there are courses, fitness courses that are offered either at Research Park or at American Center or any other place that would serve the same mm-hmm. goals.
Yeah, that makes some sense. And I was mm-hmm. thinking about myself in the garden. When I'm in the garden, you're reaching up, you're lifting, you're reaching down, you're sideways, you're in one row and you're trying to reach over into the other row. So there's a lot of different movements going on.
There really are. You've got, as you've just mentioned, a lot of the ones lifting, the positioning of the object that you're lifting, whether it's, you know, at waist level or higher or on the ground or below the ground if you're digging a hole. So all those different levels are important. And then the twisting motion. So if you're digging a hole and putting the soil in a wheelbarrow, you're having to twist. And so being aware of how to use your body in those motions and kind of avoid the what I'll call shortcuts, where you think you can just reach a little further, and you know, that's the time that, you know, something that you have an uncomfortable feeling somewhere and a problem later.
And I'm thinking about what my mother told me about my posture, which is, you know, don't slouch, but posture is probably pretty important too.
Well, the posture is important because the alignment of your body is, you know, if you can hold your alignment in different positions, then you're able to, then that means you have the strength to actually perform in those different positions. So it seems like a really basic thing, but it's very important. And having good posture can help you forestall, and being aware of that posture as you move through different activities can be very important. Also with gardening, as Jude said, you're moving a lot during the gardening. And so just as we have advice of getting out of our chairs on a regular basis and moving mm-hmm. about in our daily life, the same goes for gardening. You don't want to just be in one position doing one thing, you know, constantly. You want to be moving and, you know, using your flexibility, using your strength in different positions.
Talking today with Susan Carpenter, a senior outreach specialist at the Wisconsin Native Plant Garden at the UW-Madison Arboretum, and Jude Sullivan, senior exercise physiologist at the UW Health Fitness Center. So it's great to have them along talking about avoiding injury in the garden right now. We'll also take some gardening questions, especially native plant types of questions, too, as we move along. But what about you? How do you avoid injury when you're gardening? Do you have a maybe a recurring problem that you'd like to help have some help preventing? Give a call at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Dave Potratz, our engineer, Jill Nadeau, our producer, for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. On this coming Monday, January 7th, Tony Evers will become the 46th governor of Wisconsin, and WPR Capital Bureau Chief Sean Johnson and Wisconsin Public TV's Frederica Freiberger will host live coverage of the inauguration starting at 11 as Tony Evers takes the oath of office and addresses the state for the first time as governor. That's live inauguration coverage Monday morning at 11 on Wisconsin Public Radio. So that means that our normal Larry Mueller show probably will not be aired. In fact, I'm pretty sure it won't be, because we'll be listening to the governor and we'll be listening to our own folks doing some analysis. But right now, we're away from the political arena and we're into the physical arena, talking about avoiding injury in the garden with our two guests, Susan Carpenter and also Jude Sullivan. Great to have them along. Questions for them about maybe how you avoid injury when you're gardening, or maybe you have a recurring problem that you'd like some help preventing. And, of course, gardening questions as well. What are your native plant gardening questions for sure, or other gardening questions, too? Number 1-800-642-1234. Give a call or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Let's talk a bit about building endurance, maybe, and building strength. What are some things that we can do?
Okay. Well, there's a few, there's several areas that we identify kind of in the whole fitness, in this whole fitness picture. So when I think about gardening, I'm thinking about strength for one thing,
yeah.
Sort of one area. So that's your lifting and your, you might have something heavy, you might not know how heavy it is until you start lifting it. You know, you might be, you might have something awkward that you're lifting, so you need to have good, good strength to handle it. Then we have the area of flexibility and balance. These are both very important in gardening, particularly, but also in a lot of other areas.
Sure.
So where you're reaching, where you're stretching for something, where you're balancing because you have a load at some, perhaps at some distance from your body, and that changes where how your balance works, and just good balance in general is good to develop. And then endurance. This one comes to mind because generally I'll hear from people that they went out into their yard and they raked all day long, or they,
yeah.
or they got
I've done
busy.
That.
And but sometimes people say, I raked all day long, and they're in an excited mode about it.
Yeah, they're
because
happy.
They could, and because they felt comfortable doing that, and they felt safe. You know, they felt as though they were prepared to do it, and they felt as though they accomplished what they wanted to accomplish. So endurance is more a type of idea where you'd want to do something, you'd want to do activities every day, like cardio activities mm-hmm. every day, like your example of your 3 miles every day. Some people like to walk, some people have other, you know, cycling, etc. That kind of activity happens every day. And then your strength activities you would do every other day, or, you know, several times a week, so that you weren't doing them, you know, every day in a row. So that's a good rule of thumb for those two types of activities.
And when you're talking about strength, are we, in building strength, can we strengthen ourselves with 5 or 10 pound
yeah.
barbell type things?
Yeah, if I could just dovetail off of what Susan said, the idea, most people, they balk at, almost anything like this because all they think about is that's going to take a lot of my time. And I would rather be gardening or doing whatever than spending the time getting ready to garden. So when we talk about these different principles of fitness, and what Susan's really adept at is trying to seamlessly blend them together into a cohesive program so that I'm not just thinking about I'm doing my strength exercises now, and now I'm going to do my stretching exercises now, and now I'm going to do my balance exercises now, but trying to artfully put those things together in a way that serves you as you're doing your gardening. Susan had said, I could lift something and I'm probably strong enough to lift something, but situationally in the garden, I might need to lift that in a certain way that's very specific to the demands of the movement there. So I have to be thinking about, well, what kind of movement do I need to train so that I'm ready for that?
That makes a lot of sense. I have a couple of hand weights that sit right next to my easy chair. And if we're last night, we might have had the basketball game on for a while, or the TV on something or other. If they're right there, it's just easy to pick them up and do some curls while you're sitting there.
Right.
And I don't know if that adds much, but it to my conditioning, but it doesn't hurt.
Right. So the idea is that our bodies are amazing at how they can adapt. And they can adapt to doing something, and they also adapt to nothing.
Yeah.
And so that's both a good thing and maybe something that can be a bit of a challenge. So you do need to kind of stretch yourself out of your comfort zone. If a 5 pound dumbbell lift sitting in your easy chair is a way to do that, then yeah, I would say that there could be some benefit to that. It definitely does come down to this idea, as Susan alluded to, is like, what are the demands of what I'm doing in the garden, and how can I, without having to think about it, doing it absolutely identically, how can I closely replicate that so that my body is going to adapt and be ready for it?
We have callers online, Judy and Larry. Judy, we'll go to you first here in Stevens Point. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, Larry, and thank you for taking my call. I'm happy to have a chance to talk to a therapist. I love to garden, and I have spondylolisthesis. So I think it's high up, like L1. But, boy, a couple of bendovers, I'm almost done. Everything's on the ground. And anyway, I'm wondering if there are any exercises I could do to help prepare myself for possibly getting out in the garden.
Sure. Okay, Judy. So the first thing I would say is I'm not a therapist. I'm an exercise physiologist. So my job is to help people before they get hurt. So I would definitely refer you to a qualified physical therapist or other sports medicine professional to deal with the specifics of your question. That being said, when we train people, we train them to avoid ouches.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a big difference between I don't like this because it's uncomfortable and something that's a legitimate ouch. And so if there's something that's preventing you from the enjoyment of your activities because it hurts like an ouch, that is to be avoided, and that's to be looked at by somebody who can take care of you. If it's something like, boy, I really get sore or I really get tired doing that, well, we definitely advocate doing more of that because your body will adapt to that, as I've said.
What about, I'm just thinking in her case, Judy's case, it's a problem being on the ground. And, just from a gardening standpoint, is there any way that ground can be lifted?
One of the things that you mentioned, Judy, is the bend over. And I have a little phrase that I use when I'm advising people about gardening moves is beware the bend over, because a lot of times people just bend from the waist, reach down, and they aren't prepared really for the the load or even just that movement. So we do advocate a lot of moving your whole body down. Sometimes people are using a little short seat on the ground if they can come to a sitting position and do the work there after. There have been people who've used very successfully kind of a more of a lunging movement, so their back stays relatively straight, slightly angled, but relatively straight, so their posture is maintained and they're able to move, you know, to a lower area using more of a lunging type move. That's where some of your strength training can really come mm-hmm. in handy, because you can do those exercises any time of year and have a lot more strength in the lower body.
And it ties right into what you said before, Susan, about posture. So we start having people think about their bodies before they even start moving with the posture checks. And so that's critical. And so we want people to get into their bodies to think about movement rather than think about exercise as an outside-in concept, have it be an inside-out concept. And dealing with the posture from the get-go is really imperative.
Really important.
Yep.
Judy, does that help?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Judy.
You've given me a few ideas, so I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yeah, great.
And you can always get some straw bales, like
oh,
I do for the vegetable
right.
garden, which lift up and it avoids weeding, and you get a pretty good product in the end if you're thinking in terms of vegetables, at least.
Raised beds, or like you had the straw bales. Those are some good ways, especially for people who find that they're, you know, the modification they really need to bring the garden up to them rather than
go down onto the
soil's surface.
Judy, thanks again. Appreciate your call very much. Well, Larry in Black Earth has a different question. Hi, Larry.
Hi there. Well, I'm wore out already just listening to you guys.
we wore you out already, huh?
Yeah. I can't get in the garden yet, but I'm wore out. Well, I got some lime trees and some lemons, and my lime trees do not make the little pistil. Am I missing a nutrient in the soil? I get limes, but no pistil, or I get lemons, but no limes. Am I missing something in the soil?
What kind of, do you know what kind of lime tree you have?
I only had one lime and come out kind of yellow.
Well,
I'd bought it from a place in Bloomington, Illinois there.
Well, it would come out yellow because actually a lime, as I have a lime tree, which I've been taking limes off limey here for the last few weeks now. It produces a lot. And a lime is actually, the limes we see in the grocery store are not matured. And when a lime matures on the tree itself, over time, it eventually turns a yellow color. So it's a... And the taste is, I like it. It's actually a little sweeter, for my taste anyway. So I wouldn't worry don't think it's spoiled if it's gone that way. And the other thing that I do with my lime tree is that every time I water it, I give it a little fish emulsion, and it gets a lot of sun. And it's outside all summer, and then in the winter, it's on a south-facing window with some grow lights that are some of the new low energy grow lights I've got on a pole lamp, so it gets it at different levels. And I probably have a dozen limes still on her right now, so maybe I know I had another expert on talking about a range of things, and I said to her that I put a little fish emulsion fertilizer in every water, and she about a year later, I was talking to her, and she says, I did that, and I've got a lot of limes. So I think just that fertilizing, it's a natural, organic, really, fertilizer, could be very helpful. I don't know, Susan, if you've got anything to add to that.
No, I think that sounds very good. The success is its own
reward.
Recommendation.
Larry, does that help?
Yeah, well, normally I'm out for fish dinner. That's why I can't. It's the first time I've been home to call you. That's why I'm in your same program today.
Thanks, Larry. Appreciate the call. By the way, you can join in too. Maybe you've got a question about avoiding some injury, or maybe you have a recurring problem you'd like us to talk about, maybe help you in prevention, or maybe have some gardening questions. And of course, Susan's area of expertise is the native plant garden, although she could, I've heard her take other kinds of questions as well and do very well with them. Number to call is 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Do you ever, you know, one of the things that, you know, from my ball playing days, we always did a lot of stretching before a game, and whether it's basketball or softball or baseball. And I have to admit that I don't, before I start in the garden, I don't always stretch, but I think it's probably pretty useful if you do.
Well, the idea of, and just to clarify, stretching in the terms of what's called a static or a holding type mm-hmm. stretch, a positional
yeah.
hold, there's really not a lot of evidence to validate its worth in terms of injury prevention prior to activity. It certainly can help people feel like they're moving better or have, quote-unquote, better range of motion. But it, from a rigorous scientific method perspective, there's not
doesn't
really...
Doesn't work?
Well, in terms of injury prevention, you know, I'm all into the... if this is time spent for me, I want it to feel good. You know, there could be some benefit to that in terms of readiness. But we're really advocates of using movement to prepare you for movement. Will you just kind of qualify what it is that you're doing in terms of the range of motion that you use, the amount of external resistance, if any, that you might be using, and trying to, again, relate the movements in preparation very closely to what it is you anticipate doing in the garden.
Oh, okay. So can you give me an example?
Okay. So let's use your example of having to squat down to the ground or something like that.
Okay, well, I will just say one thing before yeah. I get going on that, which is the importance of, you know, so when you're ready to exercise, or say you're ready to do a workout, you do want to warm up. You do want to get, you know, mm-hmm. you do want to get a warm up. That can be a pretty simple thing. It can be just some movements that are not really, you know, walking briskly or just getting your blood kind of flowing. So if you're coming from like a sitting position or driving or whatever, you want to get warmed up before you start, you know, doing a, and I think that could be true of any gardening thing. You don't want to just be suddenly lifting sacks of, you know, whatever.
Yeah, sure.
Great point.
So warm up first. And of course, warming up, you're going to be moving your body. And when you're moving your body, you're generally going to be stretching different things that weren't stretching before, but you're stretching in movement. So that's a helpful idea to start with. So an example for, you know, like say if we're going to be working on the ground or planting, for example, you want to be conscious of your posture, and you want to be thinking about how am I going to keep my back aligned when I'm not vertical. So when I'm standing mm-hmm. vertically, I can have my head, my shoulders, my hips, and my knees and my ankles all lined up, and I can, you know, I can feel that, and I can maintain that. But if I begin to you know, lean forward, then I may round my back, I may round my shoulders, mm-hmm. and now I'm in, you know, now I'm not holding, you know, holding a position that's beneficial for the strength part of it. So for a squat, I might, you know, use good form to lower myself down. I might use a lunge where I have one leg behind the other one, mm-hmm. but lined, you know, aligned and, you know, facing forward. If I have to turn, I might turn that foot that I'm in the direction I'm turning for so that my knee stays in alignment with my foot. And I'm just aware of those different positions as I move in space and as I take the task. So then I'm going to be less likely to twist my knee and less likely to round my back and have, you know, a problem with my lower back in whatever moves that I'm going forward to. to.
So just moving your foot in the direction. So you could practice that before. You're saying you could practice that a little bit before you actually do it.
Yeah, you could think about what, you could think through, oh, this task is going to be taking heavy things from my left side over to my right side. I'm mm-hmm. a twisting motion. Instead of twisting, you know, we want to be able to twist in every direction and to use our spine and use our hips and our legs and everything. But think it through a little bit in terms of how you're doing it. You're warm, so you could try the move and you could see how it would work. If there's no, you know, if there's no issue with that, no problem that you can identify, no ouching pain, then you know, then you've got something to plan. And as you get more tired, you tend to, you know, things tend to get a little sloppier. Just, you know, there's just so taking a little break, reminding yourself of some of those things, just stretching and making sure you've got, you know, your position in a healthy way. Will really be helpful, because it's always that last, you know, oh, just one more time, just one, reach a little further.
The last one is the last straw. Sometimes
can be.
Yep. Oh man! Well, listen, Ginger in Pittsville has something for you here. Hi, Ginger.
Hi there. I am a very small person, and using my husband's shovels and rakes and hoes is not easy for me. Do they make good quality, smaller size tools?
That is a great question, Ginger. Yes, and sometimes there are smaller scale tools. They're a little bit shorter, and they, like the shovel head, might be a little smaller. And sometimes those are just good to use for different tasks, like if you're just digging small starter holes for, you know, for putting plants in initially. And sometimes there are children's tools, high quality children's tools that will serve that same purpose. One thing you might check, I know there is a recommendation of a website for tools for women that's on our screen here, www.womenswork.com. So that might be something to explore. I'm not familiar with that, but there are some suggestions with UW Extension. They have some adapted tools. So for example, some of the faucet knobs can be really hard to twist if you have issues with, say, arthritis in your hands. And there are modifications that people have made to, like, an overlay on your, just a lever on your faucet, and it makes it just so much easier, because it introduces a lever and it makes it so much easier to twist off. So there's a website for extension adapted tools. I became familiar with those from the Milwaukee area office, so you might check that out as well.
So UW Extension, and then just look up adaptive tools?
Yeah, I think that would probably lead you to adaptive gardening tools. Yeah,
adaptive gardening tools. And I would recommend, Sonia and Astrid were on the show we were talking about Christmas gifts for the gardeners. And this womenswork.com, there's no apostrophe in there, it's just womenswork.com, specializes in tools for women. Ginger, so does that help you out?
That does. I mean, the gardening tools are heavy enough, and then you get to things like electric screwdrivers and whatever, and they're so darn heavy that you might as well just use a hand one and be done.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Well, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's take another call. Linda in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Linda.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have area between the back of the garage and the railroad tracks where I can plant things, and I have some things in there, like I have two elderberry things, which I don't even do. I just let the birds have them. But I'd like to plant more prairie plants back there for the, you know, the birds and the bees and everything. And but I'm just wondering, could there be a problem in what is in that nectar, because there might be a lot of, like, heavy metals in the soil or something?
Well, that's a lot of questions in one, Linda. As for the area, I think that if it has it, is it still a railroad used as a rail?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yes.
So are they, can you tell that they're spraying herbicide along the railroad? Is that impacting your area?
Well, this is railroad property, but there's actually a little fence there, and they do spray outside the fence some years, some years no, but not inside the fence.
Okay. I think, you know, I can't really answer the question about heavy metals. That would be a soil testing kind of question. But as far as the, you know, if you wanted to plant plants for pollinators, for wildlife in general, if you're not seeing the effect of the herbicide that's being sprayed along the corridor on that area, it's just a little hard to visualize how far it is or whether that would be an issue, then I don't think there would be a problem with you planting plants in that area to benefit wildlife. So you could, you know, I think it would just be a matter of making sure that the drift or the spray is not impacting the area that you're talking about.
Is it a shady area, by the way, or is it a sunny?
Well, it's not shady, although there is a black walnut back there.
Yeah, you'd probably want to, in a situation like that, you probably do want to go with plants that can tolerate a bit of shade. So like some of our savanna plants, instead of the true, you know, full sun prairie plants might be a good choice. We do have, at the Arboretum, we do have a plant sale going on right now called the Advance Order Sale, and that one is the Friends of the Arboretum. They're collecting, they're taking orders now for different garden mixes, and so, for example, they have garden mixes for full sun or partial shade for wet areas. They have a woodland garden for light shade. And then they have some other ground cover species that would be suitable for shady or semi-shaded areas. I would recommend that you look for savanna plants or plants that can grow across a range of either, you know, full sun to partial sun.
I know there's one it's titled Birds, Bees, and Butterflies Garden Mix. Would that be a good mix for that particular area?
Yes, some of those plants would probably work there. I mean, it's a little hard to say without seeing the amount of shade, because shade can be a tricky thing to gauge over the radio. But if there are sunny spots, and if you can see what plants are growing there now, that would give you some clues as to which plants would grow under those same conditions as plants that are successful there now.
So that native plant sale, and it's going on right now. Huh?
It's open now, yep, until February 14th. And these are plants that you would order. So you can order mixes. You can order full flats of individual species. And the link for that is on our website, arboretum.wisc.edu. And then you pick those. You order the plants now, and then you pick them up on May 9th, right when you're all ready
to get in there
for your gardening.
Yeah,
yep.
Yeah, ready to get in there. Well, that's nice that you...
It's an advance order, and it really is a nice option.
Linda, you wouldn't be getting them next week, but you wouldn't want them anyway.
Exactly.
Would you?
Exactly.
Oh, so there you go. So tell me again, you go to the... Where do we go to...
The Arboretum website. It'll be linked there under Native Plant Sale. And, of course, we have our big sale. Our tent sale is on May 11th this year, but on May 9th, people will be coming in to pick up these plants. And we also have trees and shrubs, native trees and shrubs, available in this advance order as well.
So what's the website again? It's the UW Arboretum?
Arboretum.wisc.edu.
Arboretum.wisc.edu is the place to go, and you'll find... I'm seeing all the information. I happen to have it in front of me in print, but all the different flowers and the different things you can order ahead of time, which I'm having been to the Native Plant Sale myself, there is a lot of people there, and you want to get there really early to get some things, some of the things in particular. So
True.
Some of that could be avoided by ordering right now. Mm.
Yep. These are some special, there's some special mixes and some neat things like for certain situations like rain garden or woodland garden, because a lot of people have a lot of shade and kind of wondering what to do in those situations. And then we have some new ground covers that are available this year, either for sun or for shade.
Well, Linda, does that help you out?
Yeah, it does.
All right. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. My guests today, Susan Carpenter and Jude Sullivan. Susan, Senior Outreach Specialist in the Wisconsin Native Plant Garden at the UW-Madison Arboretum. And Jude Sullivan is Senior Exercise Physiologist at the UW Fitness Health Fitness Center. I want to forget the health all the time. It's the UW Health Fitness Center. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Give us a call. Great to have you along for this edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here. We're talking about kind of a variety of things. We're talking about the garden and avoiding injury in the garden. We're talking about the garden itself, and especially native plants and native plants, plant gardening. So if you're interested in starting one of those, we can talk about that. But then if you want to do the work and you want to avoid injury, we can talk about that as well with our two guests. Susan Carpenter, Senior Outreach Specialist in the Wisconsin Native Plant Gardens at UW-Madison Arboretum. Jude Sullivan, Senior Exercise Physiologist at the UW Health Fitness Center. Give a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. What is going on at the garden, the Arboretum, this time of the year, by the way?
Well, we just got our first substantial snow, as you know, so yeah. There's been a lot of recreational use, a lot of pent-up skiing and snow hiking excitement. We have our all year long on Saturday mornings, we have work parties, restoration work parties. So there'll be one this Saturday, 9 to 12. And that'll be that people should check our website for the location for that. We also have tours every Sunday at 1 o'clock. So there'll be a tour this or a walk this Sunday with a naturalist, and they'll be dealing with phenology or the timing of natural events. So mm-hmm. as we get into the new year now, we'll start to see some of the signs of each time of year. We'll be looking eagerly for signs of late winter or early spring. So that's going on. And then, as I mentioned, our plant, this advance order plant sale is going on. And those orders are due on February 14th. We did have a question about where would people pick up the plants for that when they pick them up on May 9th. And it will just be at the Arboretum Visitor Center area itself. And it'll be pretty clear because we'll have the big tent set up for the plant sale then.
Now, this restoration work party, I want to get back to that for a minute, because now do you get them going a little bit with a little warm-up and so forth before they get started?
Well, the work parties are held unless it's very, very, very cold. But these work parties are led by our restoration team leaders, and they spend a great deal of time explaining the what, the how, and the why of each of the tasks. This time of year, it's generally brush removal. So you're lopping off a brush, perhaps, or moving piles of, you know, small shrubs that have to be removed and stacking them. So there is a lot of there's a lot of things to consider with that. It's not too different from not too different from gardening in a way, except it's a little on a little different scale, since it's usually woody vegetation that's being moved. And I'm sure they're very safety conscious and safety oriented, so I'm sure they're giving people tips and suggestions for safe and
this woody vegetation is a bit of work, and so I'm thinking about back to tools for just a minute. Are there or I should say, I know there are some ergonomically useful tools out there. Are there some that help with this, the whole business of avoiding injury?
Well, I think so. We usually have a range of tools that are available at the work party because we know that the volunteers who are coming will be of different ages, of different, you know, heights and so forth.
Sure.
So, you know, like just the general rule of the longer the lever. So if you have a larger specimen that you're trimming, of course, you don't want to be in any kind of gardening situation. You don't want to be using a tool that's not appropriate for the job. But a larger lopper, for example, would cut a larger diameter. And, you know, so within reason, you would use that tool. Or if it's larger than that tool can safely and, you know, ergonomically manage, then you'd use probably a handsaw. So knowing the task and knowing the tool is a huge part of you know, being safe and being healthy while you're gardening or doing ecological restoration for sure.
Let's take a call. John in Racine, it's your turn. Hi, John. Thanks for calling.
Oh, well, thank you for taking me. My question is, I have just applied for a hemp grower's license. As a matter of fact, the application is in the mail. My question is, with hemp now legal, what is a good quality of CBD seed, and where can I get something like that in Wisconsin? And also, how do I go about certifying organic growing? I have 2 acres that have been organic certified in the past. I want to go ahead and continue that. What would be the procedure in certifying my plants once they're grown?
You might have caught us, John, here with shaking our heads, not knowing how to answer your questions.
Guys, of course not. That's why I called you.
Well, I wish we had an answer for you, but we don't. Although at some point we'll probably be doing a show. We've done some shows on CBD oil on this particular program, but I haven't dealt with the whole process of licensing. And just as an aside, apparently the licensing procedures can be rigorous, like anything else.
Yeah, I don't know anything about the agricultural side in that.
And if you're I know the process for organics, for example, and qualifying or certifying yourself as an organic farm, I know there's a lot of paperwork associated with that, and probably those general rules apply whether it's, if you're certifying for organic, whether it's hemp or whether it's something else. I think that Jill was letting me know that the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection has a research pilot program going on right now. So one of the things you might do is go to the DATCP, or Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection website, and just type in hemp research pilot program, and you're probably going to get all the information that you're going to need, or at least where to go to get the information you need to you know, sort of answer all of your questions. But I know for sure certifying as organic is a lot of work, and there are some growers in the state who are growing just organic vegetables, for example, who are not certified organic because of the amount of and expense of the paperwork, and they use other marketing methods to kind of get their point across to people. So that's as good as we could do right now. Go to the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection website. Take a look at the hemp research pilot program going on, and go from there. Marilyn emailed to say she has 2 bags of bulbs that she didn't get planted this fall. You know what? Couldn't she go out there and dig a hole and do it right now?
Well, the best thing I would think she could do is to go ahead and try to force them indoors. That would be what I would do, either with gravel and put the bulbs keep water underneath them, not in water, but underneath them so the roots can reach, and just see what and see how it goes. Maybe she'll have a beautiful indoor forest bulb garden this year.
Yeah, so they're going to bloom, aren't they?
Yeah, it could be. I mean, it
because they're
kind
already
of,
starting.
They're already
to sprout.
Going. Yeah, so that would be a good thing to try.
Yeah, because mm-hmm. it's too late to put them in the ground when they're sprouting already for sure.
Yep.
Well, we are talking today with our two guests, Susan Carpenter, Senior Outreach Specialist in the Wisconsin Native Plant Garden at UW-Madison Arboretum, and we're also talking with Jude Sullivan. He is a Senior Research Physiologist at the UW Health Fitness Center. Great to have them along for Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Great to have you with us for another edition of Garden Talk. Larry Mueller here, talking about a variety of things today. We're talking about avoiding injury in the garden. We're taking a look at plant-related questions in the garden, especially native plants. Susan Carpenter, one of our guests, is a senior outreach specialist in the Wisconsin Native Plant Garden, as a matter of fact, at UW-Madison Arboretum. And Jude Sullivan, a senior exercise physiologist, is our other guest. He works out of the UW Health Fitness Center. So great to have them along. Certainly, if you have questions about your native plants, or if you have questions about maybe avoiding injury, or maybe you have a recurring problem, you'd like to talk about how to prevent it before you get into the garden, I'd love to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You could email us. Certainly look forward to those as well. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. And let's take some calls here. Lester in Madison will give you a chance. What's on your mind?
Jumping worms.
Ah.
Yeah, I've had an infestation of jumping worms for this will be the third year. Last year, I tried removing them I tried to kill them.
Yeah.
With heat. I bought a blowtorch kind of, or a weed burner type thing, and I turned over soil and heated it up, and I killed a lot of them. But I don't know if I ever got it all of it hot enough to kill the eggs. So this year I'll try that again in early spring as soon as I can work the soil. But what I'm wondering is, what kind of nutrients am I losing to jumping worms? And how can I do something about the soil structure, which my understanding is that it'll be less capable of holding water?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is consistent with what we know about the jumping worms so far, Lester. If you're doing the thing about the jumping worms is their life cycle is such that right now they're in cocoon form, so they're in little about a millimeter or so, little circular oval type cocoon. It's what the term is that we use for that. And that has the little worms in it. So in the spring, when the soil warms, those begin to hatch, and it's an annual life cycle. So at the end of the season is when you'll really see most of the adult worms, not at the beginning of the season. We do have some research at the Arboretum about how hot it needs to get to destroy them in the cocoon stage. We've done those experiments with, you know, exposing them to like heat in ovens, that type of thing, not to the blowtorch, as you mentioned. So I'm not sure what the equivalence would be on that. The soil structure is altered, as you know, if you've had them for 3 years. And if it's a strong infestation, you know that grainy soil doesn't really turn back into regular soil very readily at all. That's the castings that they create. And if there's a thick layer of it, then you have a loose kind of grainy soil that can affect your plants and the establishment of new plants or seedling establishment in that area. As far as the nutrients go, what we find is that they release a lot of nutrients, the adult worms, as they mature, of course. And then those nutrients are readily lost from the area by, you know, big rainfall or something like that. They're washed out. So you can just lose nutrients because of the, you know, the action of a large infestation like that, just because they wash off the area.
So my guess is, you know, I if I were in your shoes, Lester, I'd probably be doing some soil tests just to check. I mean, you could do one. Well, you could do one right now if you wanted to, because I think you can probably dig. And the Soil and Plant Analysis Laboratory would be able to give you some pretty good recommendations based on the samples you send in as to where your fertility is. Now, I don't know if that creates just more worms, the more fertility you get back in or not.
Well, we have found that the main effect, unlike other earthworms that dig deeper, the main effect of these surface-dwelling earthworms, such as the jumping worm, is really in the top 5 centimeters of soil. So the top few inches is really where we see the effect, not so much in the lower levels. So it can, like I said, it can affect the plants at the surface. And of course, it affects the amount of leaf litter that's present because they're eating that later in the season. It can affect living plants because they can eat feeder roots if they run out of food. So there is a lot of information available on the jumping worms from the DNR. This is a very active research area. We have a lot of research going on at the Arboretum and other centers around the country that are all in communication with each other now. There is going to be some information on trials about control. Your observations actually are really, and other gardeners' observations of the jumping worms are really important to researchers. So if you could, if you want to summarize your observations and send them in to the Arboretum at info at our contact portal, that would be great. And that would be routed to the proper researchers.
And thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And just to go back to an earlier caller who had questions about hemp, Rick emailed to say that the Moses people, M-O-S-E-S, Moses people, are having a conference in late February in La Crosse on this a whole business about organic information about hemp. And so if you're not familiar with Moses, you can type that into your search engine, and I'm sure you're going to find out information on that conference in February in La Crosse. So I wanted to bring that to mind. And Chris in Milwaukee will take your question. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question about putting in a echinacea garden, actually Cheyenne Spirit, I believe, the one is the variety. And I wanted to know when it's too early to start seeds indoor. Last year, I kind of started them in January, and they had to transplant them to a larger pot, maybe I started too early. But I wanted to know about the timing so that they would bloom this year.
So which species of echinacea are you interested in?
I believe it's called Cheyenne Spirit, the shorter one, the multicolored one.
Yeah.
Okay. The echinaceas, I'm only really familiar with the native species in terms of their seed requirements. So we have since I don't know the species name of that one, I'm not familiar with it. I will let you know that they're kind of variable in their requirements. So the pale purple coneflower needs a cold, moist stratification of 90 days. So it's getting a little bit late for, I mean, it's getting to be right about the time to get those into a stratifying situation. And but the purple coneflower, Echinacea purpurea, doesn't require any stratification at all. So that's interesting. And so I guess if you've had success growing them from seed in the past without an extensive stratification, it may be more similar to the purpurea. You might want to wait into February in order to get those started then. And then you wouldn't maybe have to transplant them prior to getting them out into the garden. You could also plant them into a slightly larger pot to start with so that you could avoid that transplant, you know, transplanting twice before you can put them out.
There we go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And we'll go to Kay in Prairie du Chien next. Hi, Kay.
Well, hello. Thank you for taking my call. I have what is easier for me as I'm finding getting older is you take your, you know, the 55-gallon plastic oil drums and you cut them in half lengthways. And you put them up about 2 foot off the ground on a brace.
Yeah.
And you put compost wood chips on the bottom quite a bit, and then you put all your soil mixture that you want. And but you drill holes about 6 inches up from the 6 to 8 inches up from the bottom up to the side. You know, just so many holes so you have a drainage so it won't hold water. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I have had wonderful luck with that. And it just seems like up off the ground, plus the sun heats that barrel.
Oh, sure.
I've had beautiful crops.
What do you raise in there, Kay?
Well, I've had cabbage. I've had tomatoes. I've had peppers. I have other containers similar, only they're big planters that I put like my zucchini and my squash in. But this year I'm going to expand my barrel garden. What you do is they're half barrel lengthways. You cut them in half lengthways.
Yeah.
Well, what I really like about this story, Kay, is how you've managed to bring your gardening sounds like about waist level or so. So this idea that we had that we were talking about before with when you're moving at different levels, either ground level, knee level, waist level, maybe shoulder level, you've kind of got it. You've got your garden where you're needed to work and where you're needing to plant and weed or water perhaps. You've got it right there at arm's length, and you're not probably not having, you can move around the barrels, so you could be mindful of that leaning forward that can sometimes be an issue you know, in movement. So that sounds like a good system you've got there. And
it sure does. Kay, thank you very much for calling. I appreciate your call. Yeah, I like that idea for sure. Dave in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Dave.
Oh, good afternoon. What a great topic. I've got a question regarding avoiding injury and invasive species. I've got I have a cruelty-free, non-invasive garden. I've got one neighbor who's Irish and one neighbor who's Italian, and I keep finding potatoes on one side and tomatoes on the other, and I've got a hand injury, a tremendous hand injury from punching them in the head repeatedly. In my yard, I just beat them. And so I'm wondering, how can I avoid hurting my hands as I rain blows down upon their head.
Try loving your neighbor.
Try loving your neighbor as yourself. I think Jude has the correct answer for that one, Dave. Thanks for calling, I guess. Appreciate your call. You can join in too, by the way, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@WPR. Excuse me, I just lost my voice a second there. At WPR.org. Love to hear from you. And Leslie in Cottage Grove will take your call. Hi.
Hi, thank you very much. I usually get my seeds from Jung's, and I noticed this year one of the corn varieties that they used to have, Mirai, it's a Japanese variety, best darn corn ever. They don't offer it this year. What would make corn seeds not available?
There's any number of reasons why that could happen. For one thing, it may be, while you love that particular corn seed, it may be that they did not sell very much of it. And so I know that seeds that don't sell over a period of time, they tend to, drop out of discontinue offering them. It may be that there were some problems at the source, you'd think, Susan?
Yeah, I mean, I think that'd be a great, if you've had a reliable source of them, that would be a great question for that company, because there could be any number of reasons, and they might be able to answer that relatively easily. Also, you could ask them to suggest where you might be able to get that variety again, and then they would know that there's consumer interest in that variety too.
Yeah, and Jung's is really good about responding.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Their questions and answers they're really quick to respond. So I'd highly recommend just go online to Jung's Garden Center or Jung's Gardens, I guess, and pose that question and see what they have to say, because there could be any number of reasons why they're not offering that particular thing anymore. Well, I want to go back to you, Jude, for a minute here. This whole business about exercise, do we need to have a rigid exercise program here to keep us sane and safe?
The rigider, the better.
Or not.
I think that's where people maybe balk at maybe even considering anything like this. And that's the reason why we put this workshop together is, really our MO for this is to present some ideas and for people to take the best of what we have to offer and own it for themselves. So we'll show them not only how a movement might look, but then the more importantly is, what if they need to modify that movement, whether it be for a physical issue that they're dealing with or the method in which they prefer to garden? And so it's, again, it comes back to this concept of, people willingly getting into their body, having intention, and then using that intention to speak to what it is that they want to get out of their program so that the gardening experience is really fulfilling for them.
Yeah. So it doesn't have to be complicated.
It doesn't. No. No.
And you were referring to, as you're listening here, if you're just tuning in, we were talking about a fitness for gardening kind of workshop, I guess you'd call it. No way, wouldn't you?
Right. We have a fitness for gardening workshop that we're offering on Saturday, February 2nd, and it's 8:30 to 10:30 in the morning, and it'll be held at the UW Health Research Park Clinic.
In Madison,
yep. And we'll have a brief presentation, and then we'll have some movement time. So people should come prepared to move and prepared to go through some of the ideas we have and try out these exercises, get some background on the form, proper form and safety, and then there'll be something for every pretty much every part of your body that you're going to use for gardening,
sure.
Your mm-hmm. shoulders, your hips, your legs, your arms, your fingers, and we'll cover as much as we can in that time and give people an introduction and kind of a invitation to get prepared and not have to go through that ouchy April.
mm-hmm. And something that then they can take home with them.
Yes. And continue to do and just have a different way of looking at both fitness for gardening and gardening for fitness, for that matter.
Right.
Well, it sounds like fun, actually. It'd be a lot. It's almost like an exercise class in a way, mm-hmm. except probably not, you're not burning people out.
It's not a scary exercise class.
Right.
It's not a scary exercise class. It's a fun class. And I know you can register at uwhealth.org/fitforgardening is the place to go, right?
The registration link should be live right now.
Yep.
Is it also on the Arboretum website?
It is not on the Arboretum website.
Okay, so you definitely have to go to uwhealth.org/fitforgardening, and you're going to get all the information. There's a small fee for it. And can you just show up or do you need registration?
Registration, please. Yep. Yeah. So we'll have enough equipment and
yeah, and enough people there to work with those who show up. And I also wanted to go back to your sale that you've got going on right now on native, there's a whole bunch of things here that people can, describe the process again.
Right.
You can look.
So at our website for the UW Arboretum at arboretum.wisc.edu, we have a native plant sale, advance orders going on now, and we have native plant mixes for different situations, rain garden, wildlife, forest gardens. We have some ground covers that are available, some trees and shrubs, native trees and shrubs that are available. And this is an order form that's due by February 14th, and the plants will be purchased, will be picked up on May 9th at the Arboretum.
And there are native trees and shrubs as mm-hmm. well that you're offering.
Yep.
And some individual plot.
Individual species.
Species.
You can order flats of those if you prefer.
Mm-hmm. So anything from asters to purple prairies, clovers to columbine to a whole host of things, and some grasses, blue stem.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Prairie drop seed. So there's a lot. There and to get to find out everything there and to put your order in, which is what could be easier than that. Where do we go again?
We go to the Arboretum website, arboretum.wisc.edu, and there'll be a link for the native plant sale, and that page will have the link for the order form.
Well, that's great, and I want to thank you both very much for taking time to be with us today. Appreciate it very much.
You.
Yeah, thanks.
It's great
to be here.
Been a lot of fun, Susan Carpenter. Senior Outreach Specialist at the Wisconsin Native Plant Garden at the UW-Madison Arboretum, and Jude Sullivan, Senior Exercise Physiologist at UW Health Fitness Center. Great to have them along to talk with us about all kinds of things, especially avoiding injury in the garden. Next week on Garden Talk, Laura Jell will be back to answer your gardening questions. That's at 11 on Friday and, of course, 6 a.m. on Saturday, or you know what? You can listen anytime. Just go online to our WPR website. You can listen to this show again or any of the shows that we've done. And in the meantime, thanks so much for listening today and stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network.